Hello and welcome to Off the Books, where we surf the uncharted waters of accounting, finance, risk, and wherever else the waves take us. This episode is brought to you by Workiva, the platform that brings financial reporting, ESG, audit, and risk teams together to help you provide assured integrated reporting. Because how can anyone else trust your data if you don't have assurance of that data, right? My name is Steve Soder, accounting enthusiast and Diet Coke aficionado. I'm looking forward to debuting a great conversation, and I'm so happy to have you with us. I'm also very happy to have Catherine Tsai and Mike Gravano joining me. Now, FOMO alert, and Dad, if you're listening, that means fear of missing out. Catherine and Mike were actually on the ground at IAA International. I was not, and so I'm really anxious to hear about the conversations you guys had. Mike, what did you hear?
Yeah, we got to chop it up in the Capitol, and it was so much fun. So many, like, little avenues related to audit that I never knew existed, coming from, psychological safety and how that affects auditing, to the new standards and how they're going to affect everybody, and to so many other awesome topics people are going to hear about in the next few weeks, including in this episode, we get to hear from a forensic accountant. And just because I'm a dummy, I'm just like, I've heard of forensics. I understand that what this means more. And then I remembered when we watched the movie, The Accountant, and apart from the assassination part, I do believe it's forensic accounting is what him and Anna Kendrick do in that room, where they're tearing it all apart and finding the story and what's going on.
And yeah, we talked about it in one of our anniversary episodes too. We went back and revisited some of our forensic accounting episodes.
Yes.
That's right.
It was very excited for everybody to hear this conversation. Kathy and I got to sit down with Edith Wong, who's the managing director in the forensic and litigation consulting segment at FTI Consulting.
Yes, Edith has a background in accounting, finance, fraud investigations, and now she's working on sustainability matters as well. And she even came up with a term, the green audit trail, to kind of explain a little of what she does.
Well, sounds like an awesome conversation. With that, why don't we get to it?
We are here with Edith Wong. Edith, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your career?
Sure. So my name is Edith Wong. I'm a managing director at FTI Consulting, which is a business advisory consulting firm. My background is in forensic accounting. I have 20 years of experience conducting various types of investigations involving fraud, corruption, and various types of corporate misconduct.
Cool.
How did you get into forensic accounting?
I think it really stemmed from a childhood passion involving math and puzzles and mysteries. And when I was going to school, I was really into the show CSI. So I felt like it was like CSI, but instead of dead bodies, I'm looking at general ledgers and accounting records, which is, you know, a lot less intimidating and scary and gruesome compared to dead bodies.
Yes.
So there was definitely that appeal.
What are some of the memorable cases that you've worked on?
I've done a lot. So I love this line of work because it's so interesting. So I've been really lucky to have worked on a bunch of very high profile kinds of cases. Also cases that are sort of a little behind the scenes and in internal investigations where, you know, companies don't want people to know, but then they're just kind of cleaning up their processes a little bit. But one that's been public and one that I found has been really interesting is a fraud that involved a healthcare company. So we were hired by the PE shop, who had purchased this company thinking that they were up and coming. You know, they had made a number of acquisitions over time, and so they had a really strong revenue source. I got retained during their first kind of board of directors presentation. They were presented with the financials and they were like, oh, this is like not as good as we thought it would be. So they hired me to come in to just to kind of, you know, kick the tires a little bit. They thought maybe they forgot to add a number and really the revenue should have been higher. So they were hoping to find that, you know, that it's better than they were actually doing. We found that actually it was the reverse, that it was rampant fraud. What the CEO had done, they had done a myriad of things, but some kind of memorable tactics that he had used. One was they had made a number of alleged acquisitions. But after we went into their computers and emails, we found out that what they had actually done was they would set up an entity, a shell entity, using families and friends' names. And then a month later, this entity would have a press release that would say, you know, we have 400 employees, we've had tens of millions of revenue. And then there would be a second press release where this, you know, the company that we were investigating had acquired this company, and therefore it added, you know, X number of employees and X revenue to their books. Another fraud that we had found within the ecosystem of how they did it was, we saw emails going back and forth between the CEO and the CFO where they were just really manipulating financial statements. I'm sorry, bank statements. Like literally the CFO was working on it late on a Saturday night and emailed the CEO and said, I won't have this bank statement ready for you yet because I can't copy and paste over the JP Morgan bank logo onto the top of the statement.
Wait, what? Like,
so it was just crazy
blatant.
And in the meantime, okay. The PE shop obviously has no idea because they're just getting the bank statements, they're reviewing it. Great, it looks good, cash is coming in. You know, this is a good investment, except for, you know, maybe some bumps along the road. But we found this after the fact, and it's just been it took over a year to really get through everything. You know, it's also spanned bankruptcy now, too, because of what had happened. The entity is now in bankruptcy, and so we're trying to do some clawbacks, and there's been criminal actions against the CEO and the CFO. And so it's been a really interesting case.
Are these companies the names we would recognize?
They're not public. They're private because they've been purchased by the PE shop. But they have been in the news. They made it into the news about, you know, kind of what happened.
Okay.
That's
interesting.
Nutty.
Well, switching over to what you're working on now, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So, I really take my background in corruption and fraud investigations. And more recently, I've expanded into the world of ESG. I do find that given, you know, I feel like a lot of my kind of peers and also lawyers who work in this space on corruption and white collar crime, it's a natural segue for us to go into ESG because it kind of takes a similar skill set and views, because a lot of ESG involves, risk assessments and compliance, and it's thinking about data and how that data supports claims that are being made. It's something that I'm very interested in and that I've really started getting into.
The demand for that seems to be growing too.
It is. I think particularly because we're seeing a lot of regulations globally. It's not just here in the U.S., but the EU has really led a lot of those regulations, but we're seeing it everywhere. We see Canada, India, everywhere. So when that regulation starts increasing and becoming more prominent, that's when you're going to see a lot of companies really taking notice and thinking about, well, what is it that we need to do for our company and in our current position to just make sure we're in compliance and that what we're saying is accurate. I would say for now, it's still growing. I think it's companies sometimes are adopting a sort of a wait and see approach because right now I think some of the enforcement isn't quite as heavy as we might see in, for example, in the FCPA space, corruption. But I think it's going to grow. There's definitely a lot of scrutiny and attention to it, not just from the regulators. You're seeing it from all different stakeholders, especially I think now in day when we have a lot of consumers who are very environmentally or socially conscious. And there's plenty of studies that have really shown where if given a choice, and there's two gas stations, one gas station has kind of green lettering and imagery of nature, the customer is going to likely go for the one with the greenery, even though it could be completely unsubstantiated. It's totally vague as to why there's, a picture of a forest at a gas station. Consumer, it definitely makes a difference. So consumers are choosing these kind of companies that appear to be more environmentally and socially conscious. And so there's incentive, you know, companies are incentivized to do that. There is obvious motivation for companies to make these statements. So now the question is really, are these substantiated? Is it actually so supported? Or are these more aspirational in nature?
If you're pitching to a chief sustainability officer, how do you talk about the value of forensic accounting when it comes to ESG?
Sure. So we're here at an internal audit conference, and so internal audit is going to be a good first kind of line of defense for this. You know, they're uniquely positioned to look at the claims and compare it to internal data. But I think forensic accountants, we can accelerate that. Because I've done so many of these kind of investigations. And so having that holistic view and being able to have done it in so many different industries across different companies, we've seen so many different scenarios that we can really, jump in there and look at things and accelerate our findings and observations more quickly than perhaps an internal person might be able to. We're so accustomed to looking at data. For the accountants, we look at their financial data and non-financial data. And that's what, these ESG claims of greenwashing or making sure that what they're substantiated is about looking at the data and making sure that it's supportable, it's verified, it's vetted.
When a client reaches out to you, who is typically doing the reaching out to retain you?
Sure, it can be a range. It could be the board, it could be the audit committee, it could be, the chief sustainability officer, but it could also be the outside counsel too. It could be inside counsel. It depends, because some of our work is proactive, where there's nothing wrong at the company, but we're just going in just to kind of help them provide some recommendations, maybe improve their controls around the reporting. But some of it could be also reactive, where there's already been a whistleblower allegation of perhaps some overstated or exaggerated statements. And so, we may be involved to try to look at those specific instances. And then in that case, a legal team might also be involved in that.
Okay.
Can you tell us about the Green Audit Trail? Because I assume it's not like a lovely branch off the Pacific Crest Trail.
So the Green Audit Trail is just like kind of like a fun name that I just came up with. But, because in internal audit world, we talk about the audit trail, about the documentation. And I'm just kind of marrying it up to greenwashing. So greenwashing is the umbrella term for situations where companies make certain environmental claims that may not be substantiated. So I thought it was a playful, play on words to kind of put those together, because really, if you are promoting that your company is green, that it's environmentally conscious, that perhaps you have, certain goals and ambitions to become net zero by a certain year, or your products are made up of X percentage of recyclable materials, then you need to have the data to back that up. And there are some regulations now by certain countries where when you make a statement on your website and your products, you need to back that up. You need to have the data somewhere available for your consumers to actually look at it. So, when I talk about the Green Audit Trail, I'm thinking about, when you're making these green statements, you need to have that data to support that, so that you can tell your consumers, you can tell your stakeholders, how are you making these claims? Are these claims actually supported? Whenever there's claims such as 100%, that seems like a bit of a red flag. You want to make sure you have really good support for it. But any percentage less than that, like if it was 55%, like why 55%? That seems like a very specific number, right? So again, just having that support for it is very, very critical in our current landscape.
It's a brilliant term, because we know that some of that data is going to have to stand up to limited assurance and then reasonable assurance eventually. So green audit trail,
yeah,
I like it.
Makes so much sense. Are there any cautionary tales you can share, questionable issues you found?
Well, I think even if we just kind of look in the media and look at what's kind of going on in the news about different enforcement actions, litigation that's happened against companies recently over the years. I think that to kind of shed some of the cautionary light to companies now, you know, because there's definitely a lot of risks you know, making these ESG statements if they're not supported. There's regulatory fines, there's penalties, there's lawsuits. There's also could be a financial cost, you know, if you know, you have breaches, ethical breaches, and so, you know, you have to repair some of those controls and taking the time to do that. But there's definitely a reputational impact, right? So if you are a company that's found to have made certain claims and statements, and then it turns out they were untrue, that's a loss of consumer trust that's going to take time for you to build. So I think, yeah, I think the what we're seeing in the press and news kind of offers some light into, I guess, motivations to make sure that, you know, we are being careful about what companies are saying.
Very true. You don't want the state of New York to be suing you over your claims.
No.
Thank you so much. We do end every interview with a weirder, fun closing question. And I thought of it while we were all talking. Edith, it seems like, you know, forensic accounting, you talked about CSI and like the mysteries. Do you have a favorite mystery book series, movie, TV show?
That's related to forensic accounting?
No, just like in general,
anything?
Mysteries. Yeah.
Mysteries or thriller. Oh my goodness. Like, I love movies and TVs, but now they're putting me on the spot. I cannot think of a single one.
So hard on the spot.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite?
I'm really into, well, lately I've been really into Jack Reacher, the book series.
Oh, you read the books,
yeah,
too.
The show was awesome,
yeah,
too.
I did the show
first. And,
yes. I haven't read the books yet, actually.
They're fun airport books. They read them so fast.
Yeah.
I've realized that's, I think, like, if a dude hits an age, he either gets obsessed with World War II or detective novels, and mine is detective novels. I hit 36. I'm like, that's all I read now the last few years. So,
you know, I think the fact that you can't think of one means the three of us should get together and write a mystery series
Forensic accounting.
Yes, forensic accountants.
I think that'd be a great protagonist.
Yes. Yeah.
We'll talk. We'll do. Edith Wong, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. This is fun.
Well, big thank you to Edith Wong, Managing Director in the Forensic and Litigation Consulting segment at FTI Consulting, for a terrific conversation. And thank you, dear listener, for surfing along with us. I'm Steve Soder. That was Catherine Tsai and Mike Gravagno. And this has been Off the Books, presented by Workiva.
Please subscribe and follow us so you can catch up on all of our upcoming episodes from IIA International. Join us next week, where we'll be joined by Mark Oilrich to talk about the Gen AI governance framework.
If you like Off the Books, please leave a review. Tell your buddies if you liked the show. And if you're watching this on YouTube, drop us a line in the comments or feel free to email us at offthebooks@workiva.com. Surf's up, and we'll see you on the next wave.